You are listening to On the Shoulders of Dwarves, a weekly podcast about role-playing games and role-playing gamers.
On the Shoulders of Dwarves.
Hello and welcome to On the Shoulders of Dwarves, a weekly podcast about role-playing games and the people who play them. My name is Eran Aviram.
And my name is Uri Lifshitz. Hello!
And today we are discussing GMing anxiety. That feeling of stress, of anxiety. When a GM is going to run a game, is nearing the point of actually sitting down, and maybe it lasted only a few seconds, maybe it lasted 2 weeks, maybe you are super anxious before every game, maybe you are never anxious and you don't know what we're talking about. But many GMs feel this.
Maybe it's been going on for 30 years now. Now, in this episode, we will speak of the phenomenon of GMing anxiety. We have encountered a discussion on this topic in a Facebook group recently, and for me at least, it suddenly dawned on me how sporadic are the discussions regarding the pressure of being a game master. And personally, I just wish there was more emphasis on how to deal with this pressure, because role-playing games are a social experience and GMs are expected to carry the burden of the success of this social encounter, and we carry it with us. It's a burden.
I disagree, and I think that's part of the discussion. I don't think we actually do. But let's get into the psychological debate itself in a moment.
Exactly.
First with the disclaimer, however, we are not therapists, no psychologists.
What we will do in this episode is to present some issues that we've encountered and how we specifically deal with it.
I think an important thing to focus in here is that anxiety, like all emotional responses, is something that happens in your head. It's not something that is actually happening in the world. It's an emotional reaction to an outside stimuli. But it does not mean that is an actual good and correct reflection of what is going on, which is the main problem. You can feel as if the burden is on you and everyone is looking at you, and your own self-worth depends on how well the game is going to run. But in the actual world, the other players might not at all care about how well you're running the game, and they just want to roll some dice and they focus on their own characters, or they even just want to finish the game and continue on and eat something. What is going inside our head is not a good reflection of the real world. I think it's an important point to start with when we talk now about all of the feelings, and I think most of what we'll be talking about is how to understand this, and maybe we offer our own suggestions. And maybe we'll offer our own suggestions on what we do, and maybe it's something that can help you, the listener.
That's a very good distinction. Up to the point where players might say, I had an amazing session, this was loads of fun, and you still feel like you have been a bad GM because the things that you planned that will happen did not. Mm. So you feel as a failure even though everyone had an excellent session. I think there are many different manifestations and types of GMing anxiety, but I think at its core, it's a mixture of two dominant issues: imposter syndrome and performance anxiety. Imposter syndrome, if you were lucky enough to never encounter it, defined as the persistent inability to believe that one's success is deserved or have been legitimately achieved as a result of one's own efforts or skill. It's basically that sense of, damn it, I'm not good enough, regardless of what the reality say.
I'm an imposter, and everyone will eventually realize this, that I'm not actually good at what I'm doing, I'm not professional, I am a hack.
Yeah, and it's a really hard feeling to shake off, because there isn't a bachelor degree in GMing. Mm. We can't just show our GMing certificate and say, look, I have finished GM school with honors. I am an amazing GM. You cannot say that. We don't have any external reaffirmation for being a good GM. And even if we did, it wouldn't matter. Because that's the point of imposter syndrome. You do not feel deserve of any praise that you are given. Now, I can speak for myself. I have a literal GMing trophy in front of my face right now. First place in Israel Olympic GMing contest. I record this podcast for years now. Hi, Ran.
Hello.
And I think I've introduced hundreds of people into this hobby with really good conversion rates into them actually starting their own campaign afterward. And I still feel like an imposter sometimes. It's very hard to deal with this feeling because a lot of time we rate ourselves based on our last success or failure. So you can have 10 excellent sessions and the 11th be, not so good. And yet, all the time, between session 11 and session 12, you'll think to yourself, oh my God, I'm a terrible GM and it finally caught up with me. I have managed to fool this group of players for 10 sessions and they had a lot of fun, but now they caught up to me. Now I'm going to GMing jail. My method of dealing with imposter syndrome is pretty simple. I keep a list of successes and failures. At any single work I had, I always created two folders. One was labeled ego, and the other one was labeled hubris. And whenever I would mess up or do something bad, I would always put some copy of that into my hubris folder. It could be a screenshot of an error, a copy of an apology I sent, statistics dropped for an application, whatever. And anytime I would get any kind of praise, I would put that in my ego folder. So whenever I would need encouragement, I would simply open my ego folder and see what's there. And if I feel like I can skip some stages in a project, I open my hubris folder simply to get myself back into the right frame of mind. This is relatively easy to do as a GM. Take any time a player sent you a thank you note or told you, oh, today's session was awesome. This player told me I had a great session and add a date. That's it. Keep that list handy. Use this as external reaffirmation for what you can do. It helps me. I hope it will help you as well.
Very true. And I would like to add, if your players don't tell you on their own accord, wow, this is awesome, ask them, how was it? Was it fun? Did you enjoy yourself? Because many players, especially new players, don't realize that the GM has expectations and anxiety and, you know, that they are performing and that they are looking for any sort of feedback. Many players just come and play and cool. They're happy with whatever happened and maybe later on they'll talk about it with their friends. But they don't see any reason to talk about it with you. So ask them.
And of course, if your player's in a different campaign, do that. Tell your GM, I had a lot of fun this session. This session was awesome. That new mechanic really works out. You are awesome. Say that.
Be a good player.
Yeah. Now we come to the second part, the performance anxiety. The fear that you will not be able to perform well in your specific task. Stage fright is a very specific subgenre of performance anxiety. I had to deal with that very strongly as an improv artist. Because as an improviser, I go on stage and I literally have no idea what's going to happen. I have nothing to hang on to. And that's something you have to overcome. So I'm going to give a few pointers on how I deal with performance anxiety. One of the things that really helped me face performance anxiety is a sentence that a friend once told me before a show. He simply told me, relax, you haven't done your worst or your best show yet. And I find that strangely comforting.
Very reassuring, yes.
Because, you know, in my head, everything's gonna come up in flames. And just the fact that it reminds me that there's also a chance that everything will be amazing is really nice to remember. So maybe saying to yourself before a gaming session, okay, I haven't ran my worst session yet, and I haven't ran my best session yet. Maybe today's the day. For which one, I do not know, but there's a wider spectrum of options than just today's gonna suck.
Yes.
My second point is something that I learned from role-playing games, like pretty much everything in my life. You can ask my wife, when I fail at something, I literally just say out loud, well, that was a natural one. And that sentence reminded me that there are hundreds of things not in my control as a GM.
Yes.
Sometimes you just get a natural one. and that affects the game. Sometime one of your players gonna come with a shitty mood because their boss yelled at them. And they're gonna suck at the game and everyone gonna feel sucky because of that. And that's not on you. Sometimes you just roll a natural one. Now, I can't tell you how many times I got a natural one that wasn't my responsibility as a GM in a session, but I still blamed myself for it. And I think simply saying, okay, that was a natural one for me, really helps taking the load off, the burden. My third point is level. Your level as a GM. The way I see it, if you're 30, then you are a level 30 human.
Mm-hmm.
And I bet you're all really good at being a human. you're using all your muscles correctly. You're breathing. I bet people who listen to us don't even have to think about breathing. They just do it like it's nothing. And if you're GMing for 4 years, then you're a level 4 GM.
Mm-hmm.
And trust me, you weren't such a great example of a human when you were 4.
Okay.
I mean, my kid is 3-year-old, and he has a lot of room to improve. So give yourself some slack. If you haven't done it for a long while, you have a lot to learn. And by the way, if you have done it for a long while, you still have a lot to learn. Fourth point, share. Like all forms of anxiety, when you share it with other people, you feel better. We humans are tribal animals. When we do something in a group, we feel stronger. Find some sort of a support group to share with. Some people do it for the positivity, to get positive feedback. Some people just need an external viewpoint to validate or invalidate how they feel.
Mm.
You could be angry at yourself for something that if you talk with other people, you would realize wasn't your fault. So share. I recommend sharing with people who aren't your players because you might feel the need to vent or simply to get an objective point of view from someone else. My final point is actually the most practical. It's a Japanese saying that goes, Saya no uchi no katsu, and I'm mispronouncing it, obviously, because I don't know Japanese. Its literal translation is, victory lies inside the scabbard. Meaning, if I had to draw my sword, I already lost. And in practical terms, it means you need to win before the battle starts. You need to prepare in advance. If you think about it, it makes sense. All undead are less scary when you have holy water, and all trolls are less scary when you have a burning torch ready. So, prepare, prepare, prepare. If you're afraid of the session going into one long battle, have an escape plan ready for half the monsters. If you're afraid that the battle encounter is too weak, have an extra battle encounter that you can push into that first encounter. If you're scared that you won't be able to make up an NPC on the spot, have 20 NPCs ready, simply pull one out. A 10-minute prep time can save you a few minutes during the session, which is awesome because the session is when it counts. But I think that a 10-minute prep time could also save you the week-long hesitation and fear toward the session. And that's the real key, I think. If you have prepared for something, that option no longer scares you because you have a way of dealing with it. And that's one of the things that, for me at least, relieve a lot of performance anxiety.
This is excellent stuff. And it segues very well into my own points because I would like to talk a bit about what specifically I prepare for my games. It's the things that I feel insecure about, that I'm unsure about. You, dear listener, might have something else that you're unsure about, and that's the thing you should prepare for. So probably recognizing the thing that you are anxious about, the thing that you are afraid of failing, the specific thing, is probably the most important thing here. So first of all, my anxieties arise whenever I am about to run a game to people that I don't know or don't know very well. So mostly on one-shots. But also sometimes, quite commonly actually, in my weekly games in RP Haven, the local role-playing game club. I know the people there because I've played with them for almost 6 months now, but I only know them generally, only through this game. And I feel that it's all on me. I feel very responsible. I automatically take responsibility for everyone's enjoyment, for their emotional well-being. I take on myself the burden of being the main attraction and entertainer. Doubly so when I'm in a teaching position, when I'm running a demo game or introducing someone to role-playing games, when I actually have another goal beyond just entertainment. That is, of course, not actually the case. It's not on me. And more importantly, it's not actually the player's expectations most of the time. As we've iterated before, reality and what is in my mind are simply not the same. So how do I handle my insecurities? First of all, I want to know the rules well enough so I feel comfortable to pull a quick ruling. That is, for example, if a player comes to me and says, I want to do XYZ, I need to feel comfortable that I know what to answer. Something like, then use this skill and you're trying to roll above this number. That was a bit of a problem when I started playing Pathfinder 2nd Edition because I didn't know what is the correct DC, difficulty class, for rolls. I feel much more comfortable now and my anxiety has been much lessened by this understanding and by referring to some, you know, knowledge bases around the internet. But it's also why I really love the Genesis dice. These are the dice that you use for a Star Wars role-playing game and for Genesis and before for Warhammer 3rd Edition. And these are the dice that I would use if someone come to me and say, run a very short role-playing game for me, whatever. I will not be using the regular dice. I will be using Genesis because I know exactly how to use them. I know when you tell me I also have a tool that helps me do the thing, I can tell you, then you get a boost die. And I know very well how to read the results and use them to come up with an interesting solution to what is going on, to resolve the situation in a way that is interesting. The Genesis dice, for me, are like a comfortable chair that I can sit on. The second thing is have solid character sheets. I find that it's the most basic thing a player needs in order to interact with the game. If you have in front of you all the buttons that you can push, all of the skills, all of the equipment, all of the relationship maps that you need in order to push forward your character and make interesting choices, then you are doing half the job for me. Then I really need to put the basic for some conflict in it to show you not just what your skill is, but also what you're bad at. And also maybe give you an interesting hindrance that you can try to bring into the game because you would want to, as a player, to do something interesting. That's brilliant. It allows me to just sit back and let you tell me what sort of interesting thing is going to happen. And I just go along with that. So creating solid character sheets that are interesting, diverse, and have some interesting dramatic buttons for you, the player, to push on, is the second thing I do when I create a game for a one-shot. The first thing is realizing what is the beginning, the middle, and the end. Only in general terms, really. I improvise a lot of stuff, but I really need to know the basic structure of where do we begin, where will we continue to, and where will the game end. Even something like a big fight in a cathedral might be enough if I know this is how the game ends. Okay, so we need to get to a cathedral. So I will probably drop some clues about the cathedral. There needs to be a fight. So probably there will be some miscommunication or maybe an actual conflict leading to that. Whatever. It's a compass that guides my decision. If I know that's where I'm going, I will know what I need to create or what sort of arbitration I need to do, decisions and you know, rule judgment even during the game. It makes things so much easier for me. If I run a demo or introduction game, something in which I need to teach, thankfully, by now, I've been doing it for many years, I have a pretty well thought out scenario. I already know what are the main points I need to deliver. So I, in my head, know what I need to go through. If I'm not sure, for example, if I haven't run a demo game for the past year or so, I actually have it written down, both in Hebrew and in English, and I go to that article and I read it again, and now I remember, okay, these are the main points I need to do. Okay, these are the main things that I want to achieve. And that whole point, that whole part of being a teacher, of delivering knowledge and new skills and outlook, well, it's all settled. I know how to do it now. It says so right here. Another thing that is really, really useful for me is not being afraid to ask the players to fill in details. Like, for example, if I know there's going to be a fight in the cathedral, and I'm not really sure which cathedral we're even talking about, which religion it is, and what are the trappings, I will ask the players for some of these details. I will then build upon these details and make them into an integral part of the world and show that they are, in fact, only the superficial part of something greater. So I keep the mystery and power and agency in my hands as a GM. But if I allow myself to ask them to fill in the details, this takes off such a burden off my shoulders of needing to be able to answer any question. No, I don't know is an amazing, awesome, great answer. I don't know. What do you think? And I turn to a different player and say, how would you address this question or whatever? Excellent. Great. Do the job for me. The next thing is just like what Uri said. Remember the good stuff. The main problem with imposter syndrome is that our mind very easily forgets the good and focuses on the bad. That is not useful. That's just not useful. That's a very unfortunate natural pattern that we follow by just because we are humans. So fight that by remember clearly two or three excellent one-shot session endings in which your players cheered and clapped. It happened to me, and I remember those occasions. And like Uri said, you can write them down with a date. So it's so it's very clear. This thing actually happened. I am good at what I'm doing. I have the evidence showing this to me, even though current day Iran might be unsure about this. Finally, learn improv techniques. What Uri said is so useful because just like with having a structure, it provides you a solid foundation upon which you can build. It really helps feeling more secure. These days, because I allow myself to ask the players to fill in details and because I've learned some techniques from Uri, I have such a basic foundation that I am not all that anxious when approaching a game because I have enough tools with which to build something during the game. I hold the tools very firmly in my hands, and maybe I need to remind myself of them, but they're there. Finally, I want to return to the thread that we've started with, that we talked about, a thread in Israeli Facebook group opened by Shaked Aharon Rosenthal, and we think it was a brave and very important thing of him to do so. So first of all, we clap for you, Shaked. He brought forward very openly his own anxieties and asked everyone about it. He presented what he's thinking and what he's thinking about what he is thinking and asked how do other people deal with it. And I would like to emphasize and bring up three people that answered things that I think are interesting and useful and are different from what Uri and I talked about. So again, listeners, maybe you will find these useful for you too. Take the one that works for you. Shahar Levy talked about putting your own personal value in the game's success. That is, judging yourself and your value as a human based on the game's success. This sounds so weird when you say it like that, but I totally agree with it. This is something that I feel very strongly in my bones. Now, the thing is, while it won't change anytime soon, while I can't decide not to do this, I can remind myself that this is not a good instinct. I can verbally remind myself before the game and tell myself my own personal value does not depend on how well this game goes. It does not affect my value as a person. I'm worthy whether or not it's a success or a flop. Literally say it to yourself. Remind yourself that this is the actual fact about the world that you are, for some annoying reason, refusing to accept.
And when we say to yourself, we mean out loud.
Yes, yes.
Things spoken out loud have a magic unto their own.
Completely true. Another important reminder that you should probably say is, this is not in actually my game, it's our game. And its success hinges on all of us. Exactly like what Uri said before about the natural one and how other players affect the game. Remind this to yourself. Lilach Koren said something that I don't feel personally deep in my bones, but maybe you do. She says, imagine the worst thing that could happen if you screw up. Like the players failing to understand the reference, or your jokes flopping, or they don't follow the plot, or you play all the NPCs in an uninteresting way. There might be even some things that are even worse than that, like one of the players shouting and leaving the table. But then start actually analyzing all of these, rationally trying to look at them and ask yourself, is this actually likely? Is this even in the realm of relevancy? Do I need to think about this? That a player without shouting and leave the table? It does not seem actually like a relevant thing. Okay, let's continue the next thing. Will my jokes flop? Let's think about them again. And what happens if they flop? Will all of them flop? Maybe one or two flop. Maybe even all of them flop. No one laughs of my jokes. Okay. Is that like the worst thing in the world? Probably not. What if I play an NPC in an uninteresting way and don't manage to make the players interact with them? Does that mean I'm the worst GM? No, and also it probably won't happen. Probably not again, not with all of the NPCs. And you go through this and you say to yourself, your worst case scenario is unlikely. Yes, you might not be the best, but is that really a surprise? That you won't be able to do everything the best way in the world? No, it's fine. Not everything will be the best. But then she says, also, imagine the best scenario. Imagine how amazing it will feel if everything will be great. And use this to motivate yourself to get there, to get to the positive place. Finally, Michael Gorodin says, it's really important to push away from the global intrinsic attributes, which is something that I very much agree with. For example, saying, I'm a bad GM, or I'm a liar, or I am stupid. These are definitions that are, you know, you're global. They're saying a huge thing about who you really are, what you really are. Push away from these. First of all, they are really, really not useful. They are very harmful. Instead, focus on specifics. What is your specific goal for this specific session? In this one shot, are you trying to make them laugh using funny jokes? Are you trying to deliver a funny sort of play in space based on Firefly? What is the specific goal that you're trying to achieve here? Ask yourself this, and then realize that even if you fail to deliver it as perfectly as you imagine, this failure does not mean you're a bad GM. It means you need more practice to achieve this specific goal. And that is a very important lesson to have. Also, talk about your failures publicly or with a friend or send us an email. Just like what Uri said before, share. Bring yourself to a place where you feel comfortable talking about the times when you didn't achieve your goals. Hope to get the understanding that this will only help you achieve them better next time. How will we learn if we don't, you know, talk about our failures? Failures are awesome in a way. When you fail, you now know better for next time. Hopefully, if you learn from the failure. And like what Uri said, it really helps in getting validation, in getting some perspective, in helping yourself realize, get out of your head, which is not where reality is. I will again reiterate, it's quite important. Let us summarize then. How do we summarize this episode about GM anxiety?
Usually when we summarize, we talk a lot about what we said and how to move forward, but I think maybe we can summarize by talking with you, our listeners, and tell you that you are awesome. Remember that. And remember that you can always be better,
yes.
No matter how awesome you are. And that fact doesn't make you any less awesome than you are.
Indeed.
Keep going.
Positive affirmation. And then, taking the load off.
This world is carried on the shoulders of the war.
This is the part of the show in which we talk about role-playing games in our own personal lives. Uri, role-playing games?
Yes, several. I have 3 things I want to say. Number 1, if you are hearing me better, that is because I have a new shiny microphone to record this podcast with. Thanks to our Patreon supporters. So thank you. And if you want us to do more, then you can support us via Patreon. Number two, I am starting a new campaign with a new character, and oh my god, I am so excited. His name is Joseph McClure, and he's a war priest. And I'm gonna keep you updated on him. I think it's gonna be one hell of a ride. And thirdly, I had a D&D 5th edition session this week, which was basically a one die roll session. One roll session. It started off with the bard going and spreading tales of how awesome our group, and specifically the queen we serve, was during the last combat in the city we are in. And the result was a natural 20, which immediately started a riot of the citizens against the current government in support of our queen taking over, which immediately got us in a lot of trouble with the current government of that specific city. And that just goes to show how one roll can totally derail your entire gaming session into a 3-hour fiasco in which all the party is simply trying to reach a peaceful diplomatic negotiation with the current government of the current city that wants to kill us because of a natural 20, which leads me to one of my all-time favorite sentences as a GM. Sometimes things don't go horribly wrong. Sometimes things go horribly, horribly right.
I played a game this week. I continue our weekly game of Hell's Rebels. We are nearing the end of the second adventure. Our rebels are currently clearing out a dungeon that was once the secret hideout of the Grey Spiders, the city's thieves guild. And they are currently mostly encountering undead. Some cool undead. I don't think it's much of a spoiler. There are undead spirits that are kept alive by their addiction to opium. And they can share this addiction with you. And some of our players, even after defeating them, well, not the players, the characters, even after defeating them, are now addicted to opium. And I now need to search and see what the rules are in Pathfinder 2nd Edition for addiction, because otherwise, I'll need to create something. It's going to be a bit of a big deal until they manage to probably, maybe, recover from it.
Sounds like a new Sherlock Holmes in the making.
Sure. Also, I'm really happy with the new chapter of Shadows of Showdown, a City of Mist supplement that I'm working on, about the gatekeepers and the mist. It's really interesting, I think. And while reading it, I really got the inkling of running a gatekeeper game, you know, where you are running around town and you shut down of the rifts and of the legendary creatures and people, and it's sort of like Ghostbusters meets CIA sort of thing, and it's very evocative, and that probably means it's an excellent chapter. I just like it. I like it a lot. And the next chapter will be about all the rules of how to do all of this. And I'm quite intrigued to get there as quickly as I can. I think that backers of Shadows and Showdowns and City of Mist are supposed to get this chapter in the next few days as a PDF version, or maybe a few weeks. I hope they like it as much as I obviously do. But that's it. If you guys at home want to tell us something about your anxiety, about other anxieties, about anything that you find interesting or useful about the world of role-playing games, send us an email to show@dwarfcast.net or go to Facebook, to our Facebook group. You can also search us on Twitter and tweet at us. Tweet. It's @dwarfpodcast wherever you go.
Shoulders of Dwarves is shared under Creative Commons by attribution and non-commercial 4. Intro and outro are by The Cliché Duo, and you can email us at show@dwarfcast.net. On the shoulders of dwarves.